Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Economics Report and American Mosaic, coming up after As It Is.
Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington with the program that helps you learn American English. We have two stories for you today. First, we traveled to South Africa. The country is having big problems with power. The complete story is just moments away. Then, some interesting news about health, your heart, and 3D printers. Here is part one. South Africa is facing an electricity crisis. South Africans have been experiencing a growing number of electricity blackouts, also known as power outages. Christopher Cruz reports.
The state-operated power company Eskom provides South Africa with 95% of its electricity. Eskom officials expect the company to lose billions of dollars over the next 4 years. So the government is planning to sell parts of the business in an effort to limit the losses. But opposition lawmakers and labor unions strongly oppose the plan. The government is now seeking to limit the damage to its political power while working to end the biggest threat to the nation's economy. Eskom's top official, Shadizo Matona, announced this month that the power outages will probably continue over the next year and a half. Eskom controls the production, transmission, and distribution of electric power in South Africa. In industrial countries, a combination of private businesses and government agencies do this work. Natasha Michaels is a member of the opposition Democratic Alliance. She studies publicly operated businesses for her party. She says Eskom should end its control over electricity in South Africa.
The main reason that we find ourselves in the crisis that we are in right now is basically due to Eskom having such a complete and total monopoly around the energy production and energy distribution in our country. And I think now more than ever, it's become apparent that this is a very unhealthy relationship.
The government plans to give Eskom $1.8 billion and sell parts of the company for $2 billion to help ease its financial crisis. Over the past 10 years or so, many people have discussed selling the power company to private business. But the Communist Party and powerful unions oppose privatization. These two groups have traditionally supported the ruling African National Congress. An opposition party, the Economic Freedom Front, also opposes privatization. Sean Nell represents a group of businesses that use large amounts of energy. He says the group supports the entry into the electricity system of what are called private independent power producers, or IPPs.
Privatization of Eskom is not ideological palatable, but the use of IPPs, I think, is something which while has been problematic in the past, they've come to realize that they actually can't afford the South African balance sheet to maintain that level of investment. So IPPs, I don't think, are unpalatable, but the breakup of Eskom and privatization of Eskom definitely is.
At one time, South Africa did not have problems with its power supply. In the 1980s, the country produced more power than it used. Around that time, South Africa's mining operations, processing, and construction industries started expanding. These businesses need a lot of electricity to operate. they soon became the main driver of South Africa's economic growth. 20 years ago, South Africa had a large supply of the world's least costly electricity. Chris Yelland is an energy expert. He says today, Eskom is in a financial hole. He says it cannot be rescued until the government makes difficult political choices.
Ideologically, the government is kind of hamstrung through its partnership with Labour and its partnership with the South African Communist Party. I personally believe that Eskom should contemplate selling certain of Eskom assets in order to diversify the electricity sector of South Africa and raise the money in that way.
I'm Christopher Cruz.
You are listening to VOA, and we are coming to you from Washington. Researchers are now using three-dimensional, or 3D printing, to create models of the human heart to help heart specialists. The heart doctors can use the models to better help patients before an operation. Surgeons regularly use digital images to explore the heart in close detail. But no two human hearts are alike. This led Matthew Bramlett to create exact heart models from those images. Jonathan Evans has more on the story.
Dr. Bramlett is a pediatric or children's heart expert at the University of Illinois College of Medicine. He says the 3D models show information he cannot get any other way. A 3D printer uses images from a digital display to create a physical model of a human heart. Matthew Bramlett says doctors can use the model, in his words, to understand the anatomy for the first time. Pictures from medical tests like CAT scan or MRI are sent to a 3D printer to create a heart in a plaster or clay form. The printer then constructs the heart, thin layer by thin layer. Dr. Bramlett says the model matches the real heart in every detail. When we're done with the model and made our decision, we want to be able to go back to the source image and confirm those findings, he says. Dr. Bramlett has built model hearts for different kinds of heart operations. All of the operations were successful. In his first case, digital images showed only one tiny hole in a baby's heart. But the 3D printed model showed several defects or problems that the baby was born with. Dr. Bramlett says those defects could not be seen easily in the images. The heart surgeon was able to change the type of surgery for the patient based on the 3D model. He added that 3D heart models save time during heart operations. Kathy Magliotto is a cardiac surgeon at St. John's Health Center in Los Angeles. She welcomes the new technology. She says it could help her make better decisions before she operates on the hearts of her patients.
The fact that I can then take this very complicated structure, which has just an endless possibilities of what it could look like anatomically when I open the body, and you give it to me before the operation, that I can hold it in my hand and plan an operation around what I'm seeing, touching, and feeling, that to me is what can potentially change the game on an operation and save lives.
Matthew Bramlett continues to research the technology. He is working with the National Institutes of Health to build a 3D library that includes heart models and images that others can use. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. This is The Voice of America.
The Economics Report is next, followed by American Mosaic. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Economics Report. The Indian government recently called for all unregistered taxi services to halt operations. The order came after the reported rape of a woman by a driver for the company Uber in the capital, New Delhi. Uber uses a mobile app to link drivers and people seeking a ride. A statement from Uber said the company will work with the government of India to establish clear background checks currently absent in their commercial transportation licensing programs. The incident has brought attention to the issue of rules for mobile service businesses. The issue has grown more important with the expansion of what is called the sharing economy. Uber has been expanding quickly. The company says it operates in over 200 cities and over 50 countries around the world. Its fast growth has led financial experts to value the company in the billions of dollars. However, Uber's expansion has placed it in competition with existing taxi services and caused some cities and countries to ban the ride-sharing service. Uber has faced or is facing bans in Germany, Spain, India, and Thailand. France recently said it plans to block Uber services that use non-professional drivers. In the U.S., opposition is widespread but uneven. In Pennsylvania, for example, UberX, a lower-cost ride-sharing service from Uber, can operate anywhere except the state's largest city, Philadelphia. There, Uber Black, a more expensive limousine service from Uber, and other taxi services legally operate with licenses from the Philadelphia Parking Authority. The sharing economy permits individuals to rent things they own, such as a car or an extra room, to people anywhere using mobile apps. Even payment is through an app. The issue is that these transactions are not supervised the way taxi services or hotels are. Critics say they can be unsafe. Philadelphia Parking Authority Director Vince Fennerty calls the unregulated taxi services hacks.
They are basically running what's called a hack taxi cab service, a totally unregulated service which brings into question the safety of the passenger, the credentials of the driver, and the mechanical workings of the vehicle. They submit to nothing.
Uber says on its website that every rideshare driver is investigated using a criminal background check. But in the reported case in India, the company is accused of not performing a check of the driver's criminal record. Uber has been supporting changes in local laws to permit its service. The city of Chicago has approved rules for a mobile app to assist taxi services licensed by the city. New York is considering a similar measure. And that's the Economics Report. I'm Mario Ritter.
welcome to American Mosaic from VOA Learning English. I'm Katie Weaver. The Interview is probably the most famous movie you might never be able to see. The dark comedy had been set to open in theaters across America next Thursday. But this week, Sony Pictures Entertainment canceled the release of the film, following threats from a group of computer hackers. The Interview stars American actors James Franco and Seth Rogen, who was also one of the film's directors. The two men play television reporters who win an interview with the leader of North Korea, Kim Jong-un. Before the reporters leave for North Korea, U.S. officials ask them to kill President Kim during their visit. They agree. North Korea was not pleased with the movie. It began to publicly object in June. The government called the film an act of war that it would never accept. It said there would be merciless retaliation if it was released. Then, in November, hackers attacked Sony Pictures Entertainment. A group calling itself Guardians of Peace broke into Sony's computers. It stole and released tens of thousands of emails, as well as employee information and other sensitive company material. It also leaked several Sony movies before their release dates. The hackers released a number of emails among Sony Pictures officials about President Barack Obama and major Hollywood stars. These seriously embarrassed the company and led to public apologies. On December 16th, the Guardians of Peace followed the hack job with online threats against theaters that planned to show The Interview. It warned people to stay away from those theaters and to remember September 11th, 2001. Seth Rogen and James Franco had already withdrawn from publicity events for the film. Early Wednesday, a large number of major theater companies said they would not show the film during the holiday season as planned. Some said they would not show it at all. Hours later, Sony Pictures canceled the release of the film. It said the safety of theater employees and moviegoers was most important. Sony also said it was the victim of an unprecedented criminal assault against our employees, our customers, and our business. It condemned the effort to suppress the movie and added, "We stand by our filmmakers and their right to free expression." There also may have been financial pressure to pull the movie. The holiday season is important to Hollywood earnings. Many film studios release their biggest, costliest productions over the Christmas and New Year holiday weeks. A threat of terrorism at movie theaters could severely affect movie attendance and ticket sales. Most people inside and outside of Hollywood have criticized Sony's decision to cancel the release of The Interview. Actor Ben Stiller tweeted, "Really hard to believe this is the response to a threat to freedom of expression here in America." Actor Steve Carell tweeted, "Sad day for creative expression." Comedian and talk show host Bill Maher tweeted, "Is that all it takes? An anonymous threat and the numbers 9/11 to throw free expression under the bus?" Actress Mia Farrow also commented on Twitter. "Bad guys won," she tweeted. This week, U.S. government officials said investigators have linked North Korea to the cyber attack. American officials said they consider the incident a serious national security matter. And they said the Obama administration is considering a number of possible ways to answer the attack. North Korea has repeatedly denied involvement. The United States and its allies have already ordered economic restrictions on North Korea for its nuclear and missile programs. These sanctions have deeply hurt that country's economy and left it isolated from the rest of the world. However, it also means there are not many more tools of punishment. It's hard to predict what will happen to the interview. The dispute, cybercrime, and resulting public anger may lead to huge ticket sales later, or a major online audience if the film is streamed. The movie may have gotten the best publicity possible. I'm Katie Weaver. Do you agree with Sony's decision to cancel the release of The Interview? Do you think the Sony computer attack may affect movie making in the future? Let us know. Post your comment on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. Words in this story. Interview, noun, a meeting between a reporter and another person in order to get information for a news story. Retaliate, verb, to do something bad to someone who has hurt you or treated you badly, to get revenge against someone. Embarrass, verb, to make a person, group, government, etc., look foolish in public. Isolation, noun, the state of being in a place or situation that is separate from others. Audience, noun, a group of people who gather together to listen to something, such as a concert, or watch something, such as a movie or play. The people who attend a performance.
If you use Facebook, your friends might have posted an update saying Facebook is not permitted to violate their privacy. The message says, "The content of my profile contains private information. The violation of my privacy is punishable by law." UCC 1308-1308-1103 and the Rome Statute. You may wonder, what is the Rome Statute? Experts say it does not matter. According to the website Snopes, the law just doesn't work that way. The website investigates commonly accepted information and tries to learn if it is true. Regan MacDonald is the European Policy Manager for a digital privacy rights group called Access. She agrees with Snopes. She says, users may be able to adjust how much control they have over their information and photos. But, she says, Facebook's terms of service clearly state the company mostly owns your data. Sean Murphy is the CEO of PrivateGiant.com. He aims to limit the ways online companies can use people's private information. Mr. Murphy says the way companies use people's information is creepy. He says, just recently, I was listening to a new streaming radio service. I had put in preliminary information just to log in, and one of the ads served up had my name. Sean is an IT guy, and that was super creepy. I deleted it and never wanted to use it again. Mr. Murphy says there are two kinds of online services. The first kind promises to guard your private data and never use it. But Mr. Murphy says that protection is going to cost you. That's their business model. They're marketing your privacy, he said. The second kind offers a huge number of services for free, like Facebook. But Mr. Murphy says users should ask themselves why the sites are giving so much away. They're grabbing your information, he says. From that perspective, if the service is free, you're the product, and you should be expected to be used as a product. Facebook's terms of service agreement claims the license to use any data you post, including images. Matt Steinfeld is a spokesperson for Facebook. He pointed out that license is not the same as copyright. He says, when you post content on Facebook or any information, you own that content. We have to have your legal permission to share that content. In other words, while you are a member of Facebook, you agree to let the company use your data. During that time, Facebook asserts the legal right to do almost anything it wants with your information. Mine it for details about you, use your images for marketing, or provide your data to advertisers. In fact, selling data about you is a major source of revenue for the company. But if you delete information, you take it with you. Facebook has no further right to it. And Facebook spokesman Matt Steinfeld says your specific identity is never shared. He told VOA ads on Facebook without telling an advertiser who you are. The legal line between license and ownership can create unusual results. For example, lawyers for Facebook argue that parts of your data, the things you post, are trade secrets. Privacy expert Reagan McDonald says that idea is interesting. It means what is your personal data, what is supposed to be yours, Facebook is claiming intellectual property rights over, she says. Of course, Facebook offers different layers of privacy. Users can select who can see and share their posts. Governments in some countries also offer additional protection about what Facebook can do with user information. For example, users in the European Union have the right to request that Facebook provide everything they have ever posted, said, or done on Facebook. That means people who want to leave Facebook permanently can keep all their data. Some governments are also discussing whether users should have the so-called right to be erased. In other words, users could ask for all their data and online activity to be permanently removed. I'm Ashley Thompson.